Disclaimer. The views and opinions you hear expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. But you knew that. Enjoy the show. Welcome to Ancast. I'm Zach Burchie. Hope's here.
Hello.
And a little housekeeping up front. So we intended for this to be sort of a double feature where we're doing these single series episodes. And this time we watched two shorter shows, Haibane Renmei and Earth Maiden Arjuna. And we taped the Haibane Renmei segment and there was an audio problem with it. And we decided we didn't really want to do that to your ears. So we're actually going to tape that again, but that's after the normal posting time. And since it was two segments anyway, we decided to just release this segment first, and then I will have the Haibane Renmei segment for you on Monday. So, sorry about that. We're just going to split it up into two shows. You'll get them around the same time anyway, so no big deal, but that's what's going on. But right now, we are going to discuss the Shoji Kawamori 2002... masterpiece.
Thereabouts, yeah.
Earth Maiden Arjuna, which was released here in the States by Bandai, you know, former company, Bandai Entertainment USA, back in the days of singles, back in the during the anime boom in the early part of the decade. And I'm really curious what you thought of this show. I'm really curious to hear what anyone thinks of this show, just because it's so goddamn out there.
Right.
So, I guess you told me before we embarked on this particular journey that you had never even seen an episode of this, right?
Yeah, I had heard of it. I knew what Earth Maiden Arjuna was a thing that the Macross guy made. That was the full extent of my knowledge. I'd never seen a frame of it.
Right. And so your entire experience was just watching it for this? And
you
didn't watch the dub?
No. I heard pieces of it later. Like, I went back but I didn't watch the whole thing in English. I just heard pieces of it. It was, you know, it was a fine old dub thing. So.
Yeah, right. I saw this when it came out. I believe I saw the first episode fan-subbed and then watched the Bandai DVDs as they were being released. And I reviewed it, actually, for the site. You can go read my, like, 12-year-old, 13-year-old reviews on site, and back then I thought it was, you know, really ballsy, and I was a lot more idealistic, I think, about environmentalism back then. And so the messages, even though they were harsh, kind of resonated with me a little bit. I mean, I didn't dismiss them as being kooky, which they are, as readily. My opinion about the end. The end of the show actually really hasn't changed. I basically, the review I wrote so many years ago, I still agree with that review, which is rare. Usually, like, 12 years later, you're going to feel differently about something. But my, you know, I'm a little bit, maybe a little bit more negative on it now than I was back then, but that was my experience. So this was, you know, in the early days of my career, this was something that I watched and spoke of quite a lot. So I guess we should run down what this is about.
Okay.
The plot structure is actually fairly incidental, I would say, to the story. This is all about messages.
It's one big framing device that it uses to leapfrog through. And you know what I think about this?
Yeah.
You know, like, it's not a very detailed plot. It's like the bones of a plot with like lily pads of here are my feelings on issue.
Yeah, and you know one thing about free trade that you should know is that it's a huge scam. Anyway, so this is about a girl named Juna who has a boyfriend named Tokyo, and they go on a motorcycle trip because she's feeling a little claustrophobic in Tokyo, and she dies in a motorcycle accident. And her life is saved during her ascent to the afterlife by a kid named Chris, who works for an organization called SEED.
He's French.
And he's French.
He has heterochromia. He's very special.
Yeah, he's a very special lad. And SEED is an organization that fights these monsters called Araja. No relation to the tiger from Aladdin. But these the Araja are these big worm-like creatures that resemble like the sandworm from Dune. That come out of the earth. That it's like the earth's defense mechanism. They're sort of they're organisms that come out of the wounds in the earth. Mm-hmm. They come out of places that are heavily polluted and destroyed.
Although we should make it very clear that this is not told to the protagonist or the audience until the show is basically over. Like up to that point, they're just.
Well, no, that's not true. Chris explains pretty early on that she's not supposed to kill them, and that they are the product of the Earth's. They're like the Earth's tears.
They are the Earth's tears. But as I say, I swear to God, I just watched this, and he says you shouldn't kill them a lot. He does not say why.
I guess they don't get to the
and
real.
And it was extent. Like, why didn't you say that in the first place, asshole?
Yeah, right? Yeah. So he says, I'll save your life if you can become the avatar of time or the avatar of the earth.
Yeah.
And protect, save the Araja, basically. Protect your loved ones. Heal the earth. Mm-hmm. Heal the earth. So she obviously accepts this, and the very first episode, there's an attack on a nuclear power plant. Mm-hmm. And the Araja are attacking the nuclear power plant. And Juna has to stop this attack. And in the first episode, we learned what Shoji Kawamori thinks. It's either the first or second episode. We learned what he thinks of nuclear power.
Yes.
Which is that nuclear power is not necessary. And that if we all just turn our air conditioners off for 2 weeks a year during the summer, we won't need nukes. We would not need nuclear power at all. This is does not sound scientifically sound to me or even remotely accurate. Mm-hmm. I am not a scientist. I'm not an environmental scientist. I am not an energy expert. But I don't think that if we just turned our air conditioners off, then we wouldn't need the power.
I have no idea. But given the things that I do know that he does get wrong, I'm going to go ahead and assume he's wrong on this one.
Right. Okay. And so Arjuna actually can kind of be broken down into the lessons that it's trying to teach you.
Yes.
And I think before we go hog wild on these lessons that Arjuna is trying to teach you, I think we should talk a little bit about just the show itself in terms of production. This is an old DigiPaint show, but it was relatively high budget. It was a prestige project at the time. They hyped it up a lot because Shoji Kawamori, the Macross Plus guy, Escaflowne, you know him. Mm-hmm. Like, he's going to do this. Yeah, but the Macross guy, he worked on this. And, you know, he was a superstar director. Still is. And this was his baby. And the show itself is weird now. Shows don't look like this anymore. I'm not sure they did at the time. It's got a weird outline-less look to the characters.
Yeah, it's like Lane, but it's DigiPaint. So, and I don't think Lane has some digital effects, but I think a lot of it's on cell, isn't it?
Yeah.
So Lane looks better than this. This is no anime looks like this anymore. But there was a time like late '90s, early 2000s where there were several shows that did look like this, and it has not aged well.
Yeah. It hasn't really aged well. I don't think it's hideous, and I think there are moments of really nice animation in it. But it's clear that all the money went towards those little bits of animation because the show has a ton of repetition in it. You will see the same scenes in recaps and in these interstitial sequences over and over again. There's a heavy reliance on live-action footage, montages of live-action footage, live-action stills and footage that have been traced over, rotoscoped, if you will. Lots of stuff like that in there to save money for the big, expensive stuff. It also extensively uses CG, a lot of digital stuff in there. There's a really junky-looking robot thing that she summons. It only happens like twice in the whole show.
Yeah.
And it looks like shit.
What was its name? It's
Asherah, I think.
Yeah, right. So it's Asherah. And so it's him.
The whole thing is the Jesus, what is it? The Bhagavad Gita?
Yeah, he's cribbing a lot from the Bhagavad Gita.
Yeah, you pronounced it correctly.
And,
I did not.
Yeah.
A lot of Hinduism.
But it's all, right, but it's not subtextual. It's all, like, I mean, he's trying to, but it's, the beliefs behind the show are not, it's an Evangelion approach, where it's like, this looks cool, let's slap it on here.
It's names and imagery, just like they do with Norse mythology, just like they occasionally do with Christianity, like, it's just names Evangelion. And imagery. The actual content of the show really has nothing to do with.
I think the show is heavily Ava inspired. I know you're like a little dodgy on that. I think because of the way it uses live action footage, because of the way it frames shots, because of the way it uses narration. Absolutely, like this is a show. This is a post Ava show and a very direct. Kawamori wanted to make his Evangelion. Like I think that's completely what this was.
Yeah. Sure, maybe. I think the show is evidence that Kawamori joined some kind of environmental cult.
That too, yeah.
That had really strong beliefs about the role of women, and this show is the result, because the entire... It really reminds me of the weird cult anime that get produced.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, you'll have, like, a cult pop-up in Japan, and they will spend money producing, bankrolling an anime, a film,
mm-hmm.
that will espouse their beliefs. It'll be like, you know, like Scientology occasionally does, you mm-hmm. know, or and there's a lot of those, actually, and I know Justin and I believe Mike Toole have both covered them on the site.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're curious about the stuff, it exists. This feels like one of those sort of Trojan horsed in under the guise of being a big budget magical girl anime.
Yeah.
For the modern age. That's kind of, it's totally Trojan horsed in.
Mm-hmm. It's not even a hybrid. It's not even a, well, this kind of reminds me of, it is, was Kawamori kidnapped by a cult and made...
Or voluntarily joined it.
Well,
and
yes,
was just like, wow, I love this dogma. I'm gonna make a show.
But it is not remotely compromised. It is full force. It's some crazy shit. So, yeah.
Right. Okay, so that's basically, you know, the show from a production, in a nutshell, production-wise.
Uh-huh.
It's not, I don't think it's terrible looking. It hasn't aged very well.
Mm-hmm.
I do think there are some nice animation moments in it, and... overall, I don't hate the aesthetic of it. I don't think it's...
No, I don't hate the aesthetic. I think it's handicapped. Like, it's got a wooden leg, but it's not... But it can walk, you know, I guess.
Yeah, sure. Okay, so... So I guess, like, from here, we have to talk about, like, what is the show telling you to do? Because it is a ham-fisted... screed about mm-hmm. how we are supposed to treat the Earth.
Yeah.
For most of its runtime.
Also other things.
Yeah.
He's not done with just the Earth. Also the educational system. Also women's reproductive systems.
Yeah, but we'll start at the beginning here.
Right.
So from the beginning, it's really about, I would say the first four episodes or so are really just about the Earth
mm-hmm.
and how we are supposed to treat the Earth. So we talked about the nuclear power thing. That's like wacky idea number one.
Mm-hmm.
That he throws out. But after this...
you can still roll with it. You're like, okay, you're still with him a little bit.
A little bit. And you're like, oh, okay, so it's, you know, you can make all your Captain Planet jokes and get him out of your system now.
But it's not that crazy yet.
Yeah, right. So Chris tells Juno that she needs to sort of attune with the Earth,
yes,
right?
She has to become one with the Earth. There's a thing where... Juno is into archery, or wants to be into archery, but isn't very good at it, because the idea of archery is that you're supposed to become one with your target, and then you'll be able to shoot straight. Like, it's not just technique, you have to, in order to have any accuracy, you have to become one with your target, or whatever. So now she has abandoned archery, and is now doing this with the entire planet, and so it's, her soul is the arrow that is hitting the planet, basically. And, it gets sticky. So
right, so... So one of the big things that Chris points out, and obviously Kawamori thinks that this is a really, like, this is a big gotcha.
Mm-hmm.
Human beings, when they're in the wild, cannot identify the food that they can eat and the food that they cannot eat.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, you would look at berries, and you wouldn't know if they're poisonous or not, because you're a dumb human whose brain is addled by communication, and if you were in tune with the Earth, you would be able to... literally see your face reflected in the food that you can eat.
Mm-hmm.
So she goes to the woods and she lays down. And I actually liked the visuals in the sequence where she's laying down on the floor of the forest and she like opens her hands up mm-hmm. and you see all this crazy Starfield stuff happening. And I thought that was neat. I thought it was, I thought it at least reminded me of like, you know, trippy animation from like the 60s and 70s a little bit. I liked it. But the thing is they get stranded. Tokyo goes looking for her because he's worried, and they basically drop her in the middle of the forest. He drops her off in the middle of the forest and says, here, attune
with the
woods.
Learn about the planet. Yeah.
Yeah. and Tokyo goes looking for her, and they basically get kind of stranded, and while they're up in this mountain, they encounter an old man who's a farmer, mm-hmm. and he lives in a shack with no power or running water, and he lives off the land. Mm-hmm. This character is introduced effectively. Shoji Kawamori is saying, we all need to be this guy. Mm-hmm. This guy is living the dream. He has got it made. He is respecting the earth. He knows everything about everything. He's the model citizen mm-hmm. in the world that Kawamori wants to build.
And he sure has a lot of real estate space to himself having done this. I wonder if everybody did it, if there would be that much of a big farm.
Right. So the suggestion here, so this guy, he all of his crops have no pesticides. He does not till the soil. Mm-hmm. Everything is eaten by bugs. Mm-hmm. So it's like half eaten. Like, you know, you pick up a lettuce leaf and like a caterpillar got to it. So it's got holes in it and stuff. Yeah.
It's all like that.
All of his food is like that. And he posits that there's so much to unpack here. You should let bugs eat your crops. Mm-hmm. Pesticides are killing us, yeah. which there's evidence to show that pesticides in our food is bad. Like that's,
yeah, it's
there's
not good
plenty
for
of
you.
Evidence for that. It's really the problems that he's pointing out, they are problems. Mm-hmm. And I want to make it clear. I care about the environment. Mm-hmm. I support, like, I believe in climate change, like mm-hmm. everyone should. I don't think that we should just irresponsibly destroy the earth. Mm-hmm. The problems Kawamori is pointing out exist. The solutions to the problems that he's suggesting is where the show gets into just extremism and like just totally ludicrous, like totally
and
ludicrous.
The way that they are portrayed, like you mentioned, I don't think we fully like brought across how loony it is, like the like when you are in tune with the earth you can literally see your face reflected in food that you can eat, and
yes.
only that, and this is also assuming that like he's like all the animals understand this, like deer and you know like normal animals, deer don't eat berries that are poisonous. Actually, if you took a deer to a forest it had never lived in before, it would eat berries that were poisonous and it would die. Like, the deer don't eat things that are poisonous purely through experience and stuff that they are taught. It's not super instinctual.
Right.
Animals will eat poison berries if they don't know. Like,
bugs
that
just,
totally happens.
Bugs just know.
Yeah,
they just know.
That's why they fall for all the bug traps that you put out.
Right.
Pesticides.
Yeah.
They follow the smell of the sweet thing. That's it.
So the farmer does not use pesticides, doesn't till the soil, because tilling the soil is bad. Mm-hmm. You're not supposed to do that, according to Kawamori. You'll get higher yield crops.
Yeah.
But you'll kill the soil over time.
Well, yeah, the idea of tilling the soil is that you bring nutrients up to the surface, and you basically you're speeding along the process by which richer soil would come to the surface through erosion, through etc. Once you plant crops and they eat up all those nutrients, and if you replant without tilling, you don't. It's hard to explain, but I think it makes sense what I'm saying. But like. The way that farmers circumvent this now, the way that they try to keep the soil fertile for as long as possible, is that they never plant the same crop in a field twice. They give the field an off season, and then when they replant, instead of planting corn again, they plant, say, soybeans or wheat. It's stuff that is meant to basically lengthen the amount of time that soil becomes fertile. And of course, they fertilize it and they pesticide all the other stuff. But like, You don't keep a field busy year round. You don't do that because it is, you know, it is detrimental. It'll basically destroy the soil over time.
Right, right, exactly. And he's
just
saying,
do fucking till it because you want to yield.
He's saying don't do that. His solution is we don't need high yield crops. We just need to have one out of every 10 people on the entire earth be nothing but farmers.
Yes, farm year-round.
So what's the population of the earth?
6 billion right now.
6 billion people?
7 billion, maybe.
Okay, so 1 out of every 10 in a population of 6 billion needs to be farming year-round, effectively.
Yeah.
In order to feed people.
Mm-hmm.
And then we would get away from things like, you know, pesticides, and food wouldn't be bad for you.
Right.
And we would be more in tune with the earth.
So he's saying 1 out of every 10 people must be a farmer, and also, like, so you'll have a lower yield, and also of this lower yield, you will be able to use much less of it because you're not allowed to use pesticides or even harm bugs. Like, they admonish Toshio for almost squishing a bug that is eating a lettuce leaf. He's like, don't touch it, don't squish that bug.
Why must you kill?
Why must you kill comes up a lot.
Why must you kill?
And as if animals in the wild don't kill each other over food. But anyway, like, so you can't harm anything. You have to let the bugs eat your crops. So you have a low yield, and you have to let other animals eat them, and then whatever's left is yours. But if 1 out of every 10 people did this, no one would go hungry. I don't think there's that much farmable land on planet.
There's not. I don't. Yeah, that was the other thing that struck me. I'm like, can you do that when you need, like, all of Canada? Like,
you would run out of land completely.
You'd have to have a farm continent, and then that farm continent would do nothing but provide farm food for the entire world.
Right. Well, then you'd have a limited types of food that you could even, because of temperature.
Exactly. Exactly. The other thing that gets me is Kawamori sometimes will introduce something that he thinks is bad, but he won't explain why it's bad.
Mm-hmm.
So he makes the farm guy. I don't know what, G-san, whatever you want to call him,
mm-hmm.
He says at one point, well, you know, you till the soil and the vegetables you grow are much bigger. They're much bigger than, you know, they would normally, like, naturally grow. And you know what happens if we're all eating big food?
You get fat.
Well, here's the thing. He doesn't finish the sentence. He says, like, well, you know, if you eat big food, you are what you eat. And the show has a big you are what you eat theme.
Yeah.
It is constantly calling back to what you put in your body becomes you. Become one with the food.
Yeah.
You eat a box of French fries and you become the French fries.
Yeah.
So I guess he's saying if you eat big vegetables, like a really big tomato, you're going to get fat?
I don't know.
I don't think that's how that works.
No,
but,
it's not.
But he doesn't really give a solution to that. He just says, well, big food, you know, it's bad. Like, he's not even really making a coherent argument against, like, GMOs
mm-hmm.
or anything like that. It's just, big food. You know what happens if you eat big food?
He's saying everybody's eating too much. And,
I guess, but it's just, but big vegetables?
I know!
Our problem is not that we're eating too many big vegetables.
Well, yeah, his solution to world hunger is to basically to be less efficient, I guess. Like, well, he's saying efficiency is bad because chemicals, pesticides, harming the earth, but it's like, there's a balance. Responsible farming, we do have, like, the largest population of creatures above a certain cell count, you know, on the earth. Like, largest mammal population, anyway.
Okay, and it's like, right. And so,
we have to sustain that. He's basically saying that a bunch of people have to die, but he never wants to actually say that because that would be bad, so he doesn't say that.
He doesn't say that. He suggests it mm-hmm. a lot. He walks right up to the edge,
mm-hmm.
and we'll get to the episode that's true, that's just extra insulting if
you've
been paying attention
this entire
time. Right, this is all
just silly. We haven't gotten into, like, reprehensible.
Yeah.
This is just silly.
Okay, so after this, we get to one of the most absurd episodes that's just... And frankly, like, it's just in line with the rest of the show. It's just very easy to mock. They are frequent customers, Tokyo Juna and their friend. There's a third character. There's a little bit of a love triangle going on.
Uh-huh.
There's another girl that's kind of into Tokyo, and she's sort of there, and she's kind of fake friends with Juna. And
mm-hmm.
They eat at a place called American Burger.
I wonder what that means.
And, so after this experience in the farm where Juna opens up, she's attuned to the earth, she can see her face in food that's okay for her to eat.
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't see her face in the burger,
mm-hmm.
and taking a bite of the burger becomes a traumatic experience where we see a flash montage of corporate farming, pills going through, like, an extruder,
mm-hmm.
You know, pesticides being sprayed everywhere. Like, basically, like, things that are bad for you montage. And she starts breaking down, like, in the restaurant.
Yeah, well, first, like, they show all the pesticides and stuff like that went into making the wheat for the bun. And then they also show the suffering of the cows. It's like, they're
the suffering
cows.
Of cows, right.
But it's, basically, by taking that one bite of the burger, she feels all the things that happened in the process to make that burger, and she's just destroyed from
the
inside.
She's feeling the cheeseburger's pain.
She is
what she's doing. Uh-huh. She's weeping for the burger.
Yeah.
Anyway, so she's eating, so she can't eat it, and she starts having a freak out. Tokyo eats it and gets very sick.
Mm-hmm. Despite the fact they've eaten there 1,000 times.
So Tokyo gets very, very sick, and he starts, like, clutching his gut. Oh! And then the paramedics come, and they start treating him, and there's a horror shot of one of the paramedics giving him pain medication.
Yeah.
The pain medication, like, falls into his mouth, and she's like, No! So
you'll make it worse.
I guess this thing is antibiotics.
It is. This is an anti-vax.
It's an anti. You know, anti-vax movement didn't exist back then.
Yeah.
But if the show were created now, it would absolutely be anti-vax.
Mm-hmm.
Which, fuck that.
Well, and on top of that, so Juno can see the Earth's pain, and she's become one at one with the Earth. So she can see, like, he's just having, everybody else, he's just having gastrointestinal distress. And the reason given for that in the show is a growth hormone that was given to the beef that he's allergic to. However, the, which again is weird because they eat there all the time. It's just very convenient for now. And so what happens is a weird tar-like black miasma is shown in his stomach, like, coming out, like, it's like a foggy morass on his belly, and it comes out, and it's like tendrils of evil black stuff like you would see in a Ghibli movie, and that's the personification of the burger affecting his intestines. He doesn't just have gastrointestinal distress, he has, like, a spiritual breakdown because of this. His tummy is having, like, spiritual problems now because of this burger's and its sins. Anyway.
So Juna goes on a fantastic voyage and shrinks down and goes inside of Tokyo.
Yes.
Inside, the explanation for all of this is, of course, that he's been eating this processed food, and it's killed all the good bacteria in his stomach, and if only he'd been eating moth-eaten cabbage this entire time, he would have been fine, because his body would be in tune with all the bacteria and stuff, and he would be able to process it better. Like, his body would have the natural shielding in place to deal with this stuff.
But what about the antibiotics? Don't they help?
No, they don't. That's just more poison.
Oh,
it's just more poison. Hey, look, what you become what you eat.
And that stuff is processed. It's not natural, so it's just poisoning.
It doesn't come from the earth.
It doesn't help get rid of the gastrointestinal distress. It just makes it worse.
Okay, so Juna goes inside of her boyfriend, and so to speak, and uses her magic earth-saving powers to recreate, to spread good bacteria all through his system, and then he's fine.
They have to... Oh, man, I forgot this. In order for her to have access to that, they have to feed her, because she's transferring it through her body. They feed her the umbilical cord of her sister, because when babies are born, their genetic material is pure. And they were looking for her umbilical cord. They found her sister's, because they need to build up something with her sister later. So she eats her sister's umbilical cord, and now she has this pure genetic material inside of her. Because she's also impure. She can't use her own because she's eaten burgers in the past. So now she transfers this into his stomach and makes him pure again. So, anyway.
Jeez. Fucking Arjuna, man. Okay, so... The following episode is where things start getting really, really insulting.
Gross.
The episode following this indicts the educational system for feeding our children
all of this false
information about the world and how it works, and no one's living a natural life because it's all entwined into our government offices and our public education system, and the system is just repeating itself over and over again.
This also is the first time where the judgment aspect of this is not just educating you, it is judging you, where it says you don't believe this because you're lazy.
Yes. So. Well, right, and so the episode, like, we're inside Juna's classroom, and her teacher is, he's, like, soul dead, and is just, like, repeating things, and she's like, I want to hear your real voice, what do you really think, what do you really think about all this stuff, and so she, like, follows him to his house, and this is also the first time I think we start seeing words become literal.
Yeah.
So, words, in this show, words and thoughts become physical manifestations that literally hold people back from doing things and get in the way.
Kawamori was making a different show for about 2 episodes, because this words thing has nothing to do with the earth thing, except that I guess communication is inherently bad. Like, vocal communication is false, and therefore you shouldn't use it.
It's just how he. It's another thing on the pile of things he wants you to know what he thinks.
Uh-huh.
Like, you know, really, we communicate past each other, and no one talks, and it's all just noise, 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 and all this noise gets into your brain, and you can't hear the earth anymore. Yeah. You're so busy talking, you forgot to listen.
Right, and but specifically, like, so, the teacher tells her that, like, he explains the whole show's mantra, which it's kind of been building up to anyway, and then he says, the reason that people don't do this, she said, well, I understand what I must do, which is live out in the middle of the forest and have no connection with any chemical, anything, and only eat bug-eating plants or whatever. She says, well, why doesn't everybody do this? And he says, because it's easy, because you're just lazy, because you don't want.
The whole thing is, here are all of my nonsensical bullshit answers to big problems that aren't rooted in reality, and the only reason you're not doing this is because you're lazy. That's what Kawamori's saying. You're just fucking lazy. Oh, sounds too hard to live in a rundown shack with no power and running water, you lazy ass. Like, that's what he's saying.
Yes.
And it's outraging. Like, you're sitting there watching it like, fuck you. Like, are you kidding?
Right.
Holy shit.
And we're still not to, like, the truly reprehensible.
We're not there yet. But that's, I believe that's actually next. So,
okay.
We get through this teacher stuff, and the show is at this point admonishing you for not doing what it says.
Mm-hmm.
It is literally telling you, you're not doing this stuff because you're lazy. And the show rolls forward into probably the most reprehensible thing it has to say.
Definitely.
Probably, definitely. So we didn't mention one of the other characters. There's a fourth important character of the show, Cindy, who is a telepath. And is sort of Chris's right-hand girl.
Yeah, she was the previous attempt to create a Earth Maiden, and she couldn't handle it.
Yeah.
And she still, like, has some of the powers, and she still has, like, that history with Chris, so they're BFFs, but she's, Juna is the new one. She's, like, the perfected version.
The episode we're talking about is episode 9 of the show. This was actually not aired on television. This was only released later. This is the infamous Arjuna abortion episode.
Mm-hmm.
So the show has something to say to women about how they're supposed to conceive and raise children.
It has multiple things to say.
Many, many, many things. So let's run down the list of rules for women when it comes to, according to Earth Maiden Arjuna, what you are supposed to do.
Okay.
So, first we need to establish ancient peoples could hear the babies inside the unborn babies inside of pregnant mothers. So because communication back then was pure and people were listening instead of talking, they could hear what the baby wanted. So they could hear the baby,
and the baby is in tune with the earth more than any grown person can be, and they know when they're supposed to be born based on the tides and the phases of the moon, which the baby is in tune with inside the mother's womb somehow.
Yes.
Anyway.
And all babies want a natural water birth.
Yes.
They do not want the mom to get, like, an epidural or even have it take place in a hospital.
That is wrong.
They want it to take place in a magic lagoon beneath the life-giving moon.
Yes.
This is all animated in a sequence for you, in case you really wanted to see it.
Yeah, that's how Chris was born. Chris is able to pass on this power of Earth Maidenry because he is a pure... He's always been pure.
Yeah.
And he can't handle it anymore. He has to pass the power on. He failed with Cindy. He passed it on to Arjuna because his body is deteriorating. But he is able to take all this on because he was born naturally and has never, like, eaten a burger or whatever the hell. So
obviously you can deduce how the show feels about abortion. In fact, Arjuna's sister is pregnant and she is smoking.
Yes.
And she can hear the baby protesting.
Arjuna.
Juna says, the little boy inside of you wants you to stop smoking.
Yeah.
And eventually confronts her and says,
don't get an abortion.
You can't have an abortion. You can't have an abortion. And she's like, well, fuck you. So that's the show saying that. The little telepath girl informs us that babies are in tune enough with their parents so that they experience everything.
Mm-hmm.
So that if you get laid a lot while you have while you are pregnant.
If you get laid at all.
If you get laid really at all while you're pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
The baby will understand what it's like to get fucked.
the baby will experience. So that is Cindy's tragic backstory, is that
her mother was a slut,
and then while she was pregnant, she was having sex with a guy, and they basically say that that is baby rape.
Yeah,
because she knows, she's like, I'm not a virgin anymore, I've experienced sex because I was in the womb while my mother was having sex. And it's like, oh my god.
Yes, and so I should point out, slut's not my word, the show is demonizing her mother for having sex while being pregnant. The show goes on to explain that only happy babies can only come from a man and a woman. The woman has to have only had sex with that man once, and they have to stay together.
I don't think they say once. It's just that
while she's pregnant, she can't fuck him. So
But I think the idea is that, like, you could try to get pregnant multiple times. But the idea is that the show does not have a no sex before marriage. It's a very different sort of thing. It is basically, as soon as a woman comes of age, she is meant to give birth. Like, that's the show's take on it. You choose your man, and then you conceive a child, and that's it. And then never have relations with any other men ever. You stay with that man, and you raise that child that way, or else they will be impure. And Juna and Tokyo both have divorced parents, and that's why they're so unhappy.
Yes, and it's so strict. Basically, you have sex to conceive. Once you're pregnant, no fun. You can't have any fun. And I mean, no one's advocating that you should smoke while you're pregnant or anything like that.
Right.
Duh. But the whole, like, no sex thing because the baby's going to know what it feels like to get railed. I mean, come on.
That's horrifying.
The really insulting thing about this, aside from the whole just completely stripping women of their right to choose. Of any free will, is the suggestion that unless your parents are... unless the two people who conceived you raise you, you're going to be twisted and miserable.
Yeah.
You have, like, your mom can't remarry.
Yeah.
Or you're going to be fucked up. Like, she can't, like, the husband and wife have to be, the two people that conceived the baby have to be the parents, or they're going to be fucked up.
Right. Not that it's condemning the kids necessarily. It's just saying poor Juna and Tokyo.
Oh, like, they just, you know, their lot in life is bad because mom and dad got divorced.
Yeah,
and
it's your fault, you terrible parents. Like,
yeah.
God.
Okay, so.
Let's run down that chronologically. So, man and woman, as soon as the woman is of age, conceive. Don't break up with the man. Don't have sex while pregnant. Don't abort the baby. Have a natural birth, no epidural, no hospitals, and then stay with them and raise the child. Don't break up. So there we go. That's everything.
Okay. After all of this, it rolls into God. Okay. There's more. It rolls back into the food stuff for a little while. We get another cheeseburger episode. It's posited at one point that if big countries like the U.S. Reduce their meat consumption, world hunger would be solved.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I've heard variants of this before. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, if only the U.S. would cut down on its meat, on its beef consumption, like, that would change so many factors that world hunger would be solved. Because, I don't know how that would work, but this is something that gets posited. Mm-hmm. The other thing that gets posited is that free trade is a lie.
Mm.
So I guess it's better for world powers to control food and the means of production of food than it is to wage wars or be involved in military conflicts.
Mm-hmm.
Because whoever controls food production really controls everything.
That's what
the show is positing. What I don't understand is how if free trade is a lie and all of that is bullshit, and it's just these big companies controlling everything for themselves, and these big countries. If they reduce beef consumption, would all of them suddenly become benevolent and start sharing everything? And that's how.
Well, once you become in tune with the earth, then you feel the pain of like the earth and literally everyone around you, and you really communicate, and everybody becomes perfect tree people, and you know. So therefore, you would share equally.
Okay. There's a little bit more. There's a little bit more with the pharmaceutical stuff. This plays into an incredibly insulting and terrible character that shows up late. This has been there the whole time, but we learn her backstory. later on, towards the end of the show, Juna encounters a soldier for Seed, who's fighting for Seed and wants to save the Earth. The reason that she's fighting is because she is, what is the word?
I'm not sure what the, intersex.
She's right. Intersex.
She was born with both chromosomes.
Yes. This is blamed on the fact that her mother took antibiotics while she was pregnant. So, you know, antibiotics are poison.
Right.
And so antibiotics cause people to be born intersex. She's so ashamed of what she is. She's this twisted monster turned that way by pharmaceutical companies.
Right.
That she rejects the love of someone. She rejects the relationship with someone and just dedicates herself to fighting to save the Earth. To destroy the pharmaceutical companies that turned her into the, according to the show, apparently twisted monster that she is.
Well, yeah, she says she considers herself an abomination, and Juna is like, but you still deserve love, and she's like, no, I broke it off with my boyfriend because, and they make it very clear, she's biologically female. She can't have children, but she's biological. This is, again, how it's framing it, as if the abomination is that she can't have children, and that is the purpose of all women, after all. But she's biologically female, looks like it. The bad thing is that she's not fertile, because she has, like, XXY, I think is what it is. And, yeah, that's just terrible. Like, that's fucking terrible at the show.
It's really insulting. It's really insulting. Yeah. Like, I just can't even get... Like, I think if he made the show now and that episode came out, he would just be fucking pilloried for it. And with good cause.
Yeah.
It's a terrible thing to suggest.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is when the show wraps up. The last couple episodes. Effectively, Tokyo's father is the head of a chemical concern in Tokyo. Tokyo. Anyway, his father is the head of a chemical concern. They're experimenting with a chemical that breaks down petrochemicals. So this thing feeds on anything that's a byproduct of oil.
Yes.
This thing gets out, there's an explosion, the Raja attack, and it gets everywhere. And soon Japan is quarantined from the rest of the world because everything is melting and it turns into a horrible wasteland where petrochemicals are just, everything is melting, basically.
Yeah. I preferred the episode of Full Metal Panic where this happened and everybody's clothes just...
Yeah, right.
That was much better, you know?
So the bacteria breaks down these petrochemicals. Juna saves everybody by attuning with the Earth fully and you know, it's magical girl stuff. Here is where the show just, it sticks the landing, and it's like a gymnast, like, sticks the landing and then lets out a huge fart. Like, just a giant fart.
Yeah.
Kawamori's solution to all of this
Is one that doesn't exist.
So Juna saves everybody. The Raja start of the Raja basically are sort of released and they become corporeal and fall to the Earth. So there are these giant worm bodies everywhere.
Yeah, and the justification for this is that Juna, from the beginning, has been trying to kill the worms. To the response of Kress only ever saying, "Why do you kill? Why do you kill? Well, I have to kill. You told me to protect the Earth, you know." And so in the very last or second to last episode, Kress goes, "Oh, they are the Earth. Why didn't you say that in the first place?" Yep. You know? And so she stops trying to kill them and instead tries to become one with them, just like all the other parts of the Earth, because they too are the tears of the Earth. And this causes them to become corporeal, like you said, and then...
So the big bodies of the worms fall to the Earth, and Tokyo wanders over to one and takes a heapin' helpin' of Raja guts and starts eating it. And here's Kawamori's solution. Giant Earth tier worms will just come out of the Earth and land everywhere. That's our sustainable food source.
Yes.
So we don't need to eat processed food anymore and turn ourselves into horrible toxic monsters. Because we will have this natural thing that the Earth has given to us, and we are eating from the Earth, and no one, I guess we don't have to do that whole millions upon millions of farmers.
Oh, they do. They do. But it's like that Roger are giving them time to make things right. It's like once they'll eventually run out of worm flesh, but in the meantime, they can sustain themselves in a pure way while they fix the earth.
They can attune to the earth.
Yes.
So that's basically the show.
That's the show, yeah.
That's the show.
Da, and, da, 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 da.
Yeah. And I have to say, after watching it again, and I hadn't seen this for 12 years, and I mostly remember the cheeseburger stuff and the abortion episode, I have a lot of respect for how fucking crazy Earth Maiden Arjuna is. There's nothing like it. There is nothing else out there like it. As an anime, it has huge brass cojones on it, that it is just full force. Here is how nuts I am. Here's all my crazy ideas about the earth, and I am admonishing you for not stopping this show and going out there and becoming a subsistence farmer yourself. Like, there shows are rarely ever this political.
As Kawamori is, of course.
Yeah, and shows are rarely ever this political. Mm-hmm. They're rarely ever this direct. Like, shit like this doesn't exist. Mm-hmm. And because it's so fucking batshit, I have a respect for it. I think it's kind of great that it exists. Mm-hmm. I'm glad I have the DVDs, which you can actually get secondhand for, like, nothing. Like, the show is pretty widely available. They didn't sell a lot of these, fancy that. Mm-hmm. Like, it wasn't popular when it came out, and it didn't sell well. Oh my gosh, what a shock. And it's on Hulu. You can watch it on Hulu. I'm happy the show exists. I think it's hilariously crazy, wildly entertaining, just because the stuff it's throwing at you is so nuts and so galling.
Yeah,
I would recommend it if you're the sort of person that is fascinated and intrigued by something like that, by what we're describing. Mm-hmm. Not because you agree with the crazy ideas in it, but anime like this just doesn't
exist.
Or you
do. I mean, that's the only.
Who knows? Maybe people do, but. If you're just curious, like, if you just want to see something wackadoo, like, top-to-bottom wackadoo, that show. It's that show, and there's nothing else like it.
Yeah. I have a slightly different take on it, which, I mean, like, I do not respect it at all. I think it's funny that it exists. It's one of those things, I mean, so this is completely different because it's not political at all, but there is a huge box office bomb out right now called Jupiter Ascending, and I deeply enjoyed watching that movie because it is crazy pants kookadoo. But it's not something where it's like, yes, I'm glad that this exists and I want more of it and I respect it. I don't feel that way at all. It's like these things happen sometimes. These crazy pants, loony things get made, and then it's fun to enjoy them. But it's not something I wish would be made more, or I want to encourage the further creation of, especially with ideas as reprehensible as the ones that exist in this. And also, like, it is very fascinating. It is very entertaining. You will not be bored watching it for the most part. It gets pretty repeat stock footagey, and then it's super boring. But the problem is, it is not pleasant to watch. It's interesting. It's fascinating, but it is deeply unpleasant. You will feel kind of sick while you're watching it. Partly because some of it is not aged well. It's not attractive to look at. So, like, I don't know if I would recommend it to people. For the most part, I just feel like I want to describe it to people, but I'm going to, like, describe it, laugh, and say, but haha, don't watch it.
I would never bring it up if someone's like, hey, what anime should I watch? I would never bring this up. But if I knew someone's taste, they were like, hey, I've seen some of those cult anime. I want to see something crazy.
Crazy, right?
And I'm like, oh, here, like, what? You will feast on this.
If somebody wants to see, like, the looniest that anime has and not in a can you believe this randomness, but in a, like, this is extremely unique and what the fuck, then yeah, but apart from that, I think it's absolutely terrible and should be thrown into the pits of hell, basically.
I hated it,
but it was fun. It was interesting to watch. I'm glad I saw it. It was unique, but I wouldn't, like, endorse the creation of stuff like this. It's just weird that it exists, but deeply unpleasant to watch. It's cringy, so yeah. Yeah. It's like watching art house film or non-narrative film or stuff like that. If you like that stuff, then, like, not that this is art house or non-narrative, it's just, like, if you like that stuff just because it's weird, like, yeah. But it's not pleasant.
Yeah. Okay, so we got some Twitter questions about this show, just a few. Carl R. Olson asks, did Arjuna make you hungry or put you off meat for a bit? I know I was queasy for a week or two after that burger montage.
I wanted to eat a giant rack of ribs.
I didn't
spike calamari and stuff it in my face.
I didn't have a reaction to it. I was just laughing at the... Because at one point, the love triangle character, the other girl, picks up a burger and, like, crams it in her face. And is like, ah! And she's like, ah! And, like, shrinks from the burger. And it's fucking hilarious.
It's a great moment where she's just like... It's sort of an awkward threesome sitting around this table at the fast food restaurant. She suddenly grabs a burger while it's in his package and just holds it about an inch from Juna's face just to see what will happen. And Juna's like, ah! And it's so funny.
Yeah. It didn't make me sick or anything. And he says, also thoughts on the OST. It's Yoko Kanno. There's plenty of really good music. I don't think it's like one of her best things or anything, but no, there's some really good stuff in there.
It's Yoko Kanno in the same way that Escaflowne is Yoko Kanno, which means it has one or two really standout pieces that they use over and over, rather than it being sort of this full eclectic sampling like her later work. So it's like it's got the Arjuna theme, which is or whatever, like it's that over and over. So that stuff is super good, but it is, like, you think Yoko Kanno, you think, like, a large spread of stuff, and this is, like, a couple strong pieces.
Yeah. Brainchild 129 asks, do you think the idea of an environment-themed magical girl show could have ever worked, or is Arjuna doomed from the start? I don't know. People don't recoil so much... as much as they used to from things that are environmentally themed. I mean, for the longest time, anytime anything would even dare bring up, like, hey, we should be less wasteful, we should recycle, we should, eat more organic food, people would immediately just start beating on it with sledgehammers for being too preachy. I mean, Miyazaki movies get that kind of treatment. Mm-hmm. There was a while people were just super allergic to it. I feel like... Mm-hmm. Politically, it was kind of a hot potato. It still is, but...
Mm-hmm. Well, there was a lot of backlash from, like, heavy... What era would you say was, like, the heaviest with that?
It was around the release of An Inconvenient Truth. It was all in that era with...
I was thinking before that. I was thinking back to, like...
In the 90s and stuff when they started pushing it really hard. But stuff like Captain Planet and things like that. So 90s and then into the early 2000s. I'm on their side. Like, I'm on the side of the people who want to save the Earth. I'm okay with it, but... in terms of, like, commercially viable, probably not. I can't imagine anyone taking a risk on something like that now. Mm-hmm. Viable, I think you could write an okay show around that.
Yeah.
I think you could have themes or elements of that in there, but commercially viable, probably not.
No, yeah, and it would be, it would work better if it was, like, if it was less of a message show and more just, like, laced into the theme where it was, like, learning about the Earth and learning about, like, if it was more immersive and less messagey, I guess.
Yeah. And finally, Olive Mitch asks, if the views expressed in Arjuna ever became a legitimate belief system, how do you think they would be viewed by the general public?
Damn hippies.
Fucking crazy. It is a weird combination of bizarrely conservative views on reproductive rights and way far left views on the environment. If you're looking at this through the prism of American politics, these are two things that happen on either side in either political party. They're not, the twain don't really meet.
Yeah.
I think the ideas are so extreme and the admonishment is so harsh that since it's not only offering extreme irrational solutions to big problems, but it's also calling you a lazy idiot for not doing them.
Right.
That I don't think they would be taken seriously.
Of course not.
Just the idea that one out of every 10 people needs to be a farmer is fucking absurd.
Mm-hmm.
So no.
And well, even more than that, like literally don't. I understand chemical pesticides. Like it's a really dodgy issue, but the idea don't do anything that might keep other animals from eating your crops, like, no.
and the idea is like, oh, they're only gonna eat the bad parts.
No, that's not true.
Which isn't true.
Not true at all. Insects will eat absolutely anything. They don't just eat the bad parts of leaves. Insects will eat absolutely everything. And larger mammals will definitely eat only the good stuff. So that's just completely untrue.
Yeah. Anyway, so I guess that wraps us up. seek it out if that sounds like something you want to experience for yourself. I really wanted to go back and revisit the show just because I remembered it. And I was like, wow, that show was crazy. I should watch that again. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad you decided to take that journey with me. So
yeah, I'm glad I saw it. I think it's horrible, but I'm glad I saw it. I like watching horrible things.
So. All right. Okay, that's our show. The theme song is Bucharest by the band The New Division. You can check them out at newdivisionmusic.com. Don't forget, subscribe to us on iTunes, leave us a rating or review. We'd really appreciate it. And we'll see you all next week.